and for a moment the urge to skim my teeth along her lobe, to press my mouth against her throat, was overwhelming. The scent of her, stronger than ever now, made it hard to focus. "You're dying to kill me," I murmured. "So what the fuck are you waiting for?" I didn't move, but I felt the cold press of her blade to my chest, stinging where the tip threatened to break the skin. I pulled back just enough to look at her, our foreheads touching. Her eyes, big and round as the moon, stared into mine. Sometimes I felt like I knew Araya better than anyone I had ever met. Sometimes she was the most confounding mystery. Now, she was both. Her hidden pain so obvious, and yet her trembling grip around her blade a question that I didn't know how to answer. A trickle of blood ran down the center of my abdomen. Araya's breath, shaky and quick, mingled with mine. "Well," I rasped, "are you going to kill me, princess?" I really wanted to know. Maybe tonight would finally be the night. Araya didn't speak. Her teeth gritted, mouth snarling, the flames encircling us like a lover's embrace. Another drip of blood down my chest. But she didn't move. She wouldn't do it. She wouldn't do it. This truth hit me with sudden certainty. A confirmation of something that honestly confused me, because Araya did have every reason to kill me. For the briefest moment, her rage gave way to something else. Something she closed her eyes and looked away to avoid showing me, but I grabbed her chin and tilted her head back to me. My mouth opened. And then blood spattered over my face as Araya jolted, an arrow now lodged in her flesh.
Chapter 11. Araya. I was stupid. I was distracted. I didn't see the arrow coming until it was too late. I felt the blood before the pain. Thick, wet warmth spreading over my side beneath my arm, which had been lifted to hold my blade. The sword clattered to the floor. The world dimmed as the white heat of nightfire ebbed. Suddenly I was moving, no longer against the wall but to the side of it, sliding to the ground without my permission. Rain grabbed me and pulled me behind him. His form, massive and silhouetted by the flames, loomed before me.
"The fuck do you think you're doing?" he roared.
My eyes fell to the other end of the hall, struggling to see through the smoke and my blurring vision. A young bloodborne soldier cowered under Rain's vicious glare, eyes widening as they fell to me, and he realized who I was.
She was attacking you," he stuttered.
A torrent of curses flew from Rain's mouth, falling into mush in my head. Through the fire, I could make out more silhouettes pouring through the hallway. More bloodborne? Reinforcements. Fuck. My hand pressed to my wound. It bled heavily. Half vampire or no, blood was always my weakness. It always seemed ready to pour out of me at any opportunity. Then my head turned, and I made out a figure through the smoke, crouched in the corner. Jasmine. I recognized her even as little more than a hazy silhouette. She stared at me through the smoke, creeping forward as Rain berated his soldier. She took half a step closer, but I shook my head. She hesitated, eyes narrowing, questioning it. But I shook my head, harder this time, a wordless command. Go. Now. Maybe we could take the Rishon. But if Bloodborne were here now, Jasmine and her people, my people, were about to be decimated. She crept closer again, the smoke clearing enough for me to see the protest in her eyes, the unspoken, "What about you?" I tried to wave her away. The motion was too much. My vision blurred. Darkened. I didn't remember losing consciousness, but suddenly I was flat on the ground, staring into Rain's face as he leaned over me. He was saying something I couldn't make out. It didn't matter, because I was slipping away before the words left his lips. I didn't want his eyes to follow me into unconsciousness, but they did anyway. Chapter 12. Araya. For the first time in weeks, I did not dream of Vincent. Instead, I dreamed of Rain, and the way his face looked as he died, and the way my blade felt sliding into his chest. I dreamed it over and over and over again. I opened my eyes to a familiar cerulean glass ceiling. Rain's dead face faded away into scattered silver-painted stars. I tried to move, but my body didn't cooperate, rewarding me with a sharp pain in my side.
Not yet.
My chest ached. It hurt to hear Rain's voice. It took me a minute to muster up the courage to turn my head. I half expected to see him the way I saw him in my nightmares. Dead. My blade in his chest. But no, Rain was very much alive. He was beside my bed, leaning over me. I realized that the sharp pain in my side was because he was dressing my wound and...
Goddess,
I shifted uncomfortably as I realized that I was topless, save for the bandages wrapped around my chest. Rain chuckled.
You were at your most seductive.
I wished I had a barbed retort for that, but my brain felt like my thoughts were moving through sludge.
You've been given some drugs, he said. Give it a minute.
Mother, my head hurt. I remembered the attack, running to the armory. My blade pressed to Rain's chest for the second time.
You want to do it, so do it.
And I didn't. Couldn't. Even with his heart right there for the taking. I could have ended all of this, could have taken back my father's throne, could have avenged his death. I swallowed, or tried to. As if sensing it, Rain finished securing the bandage to my side and then handed me a glass.
Water, he said.
I stared at it, and he scoffed.
What? You think this is when I'd poison you?
Honestly? Yes. I'd escaped. I'd fought him. I could only assume that they didn't know my part in what had happened, or else I'd be chained up in a dungeon right now. Rain laughed softly. A sound so oddly warm I felt it run up my spine.
That face, he said, shaking his head. Just drink, all right?
I was very, very thirsty. So I did.
Amazing what a close call some foot soldier's arrow can be,
he muttered. Rain was bandaged up too. He winced a little as he stood. I took a little pride in that, at least. He'd been healed, and well, but the remnants of nightfire burns remained on his cheeks, and stains of dark blood bloomed through the fabric around his torso from the gash I'd opened. I swallowed and finally felt like I could speak. You don't have more important things to do than play nursemaid?
As always, you have such a strange way of saying thank you.
I'm just surprised. He raised an eyebrow.
What if I told you all the nurses are afraid of you? The Nightfire Queen who just tried to take down the Rishon army.
I'd say that's smart of them. Stupid of me to play along with this pretend version of what we'd been in the Qajari. My head was killing me. I sat up, hissing an inhale at the pain that shot up my side. Rain was right. That one soldier got a hell of a shot in.
It was enhanced with blood magic,
Rain said as if he could read my mind. Fucking bloodborne. That final piece of what had happened, the bloodborne reinforcements arriving, fell over me like a blanket of cold dread. Jasmine's men were well matched against the Rishon, an equal fight we might have won. But the bloodborne tipped the scales. They were efficient and brutal. Rain stood at my bedchamber window,
looking out over the nighttime cityscape of Sivrinage. I wondered if perhaps he was staring at the Hiaj bodies now no doubt staked through the city walls. He said nothing, so I said nothing. I wouldn't give him the satisfaction of asking. He turned around after a long moment, staring at me, his hands in his pockets. He looked tired. None of his kingly finery. He looked just like he had when we'd shared an apartment in the Moon Palace. Familiar. The version of him I had thought I knew. His face was hard, tired. I know you want to ask, so I'll tell you. We didn't capture any Hiaj. We cleared out a few dozen dead bodies, just as many Rishon as Hiaj, which should be satisfying to you. Just as it should be satisfying to know that the armory was destroyed. We lost enough valuable weaponry that it'll take us the better part of a year to replenish the stores. I tried not to have any reaction. It wasn't satisfying. I'd sacrificed bodies we didn't have for this. It was something, but it was closer to a draw than the victory I'd craved. And here I was, captive. Captive, but oddly, alive. I frowned down at myself, at the bandages around me, then at the bottles of medicine on the bedside table. It would have been convenient for you to let me die, I said. Rain crossed his arms over his chest. His brow twitched. Would have been convenient for you to kill me in that armory, he said simply. Why didn't you? You had your shot. Good question, little serpent, Vincent whispered. Why? You had the perfect opening. The truth was, I didn't know what had stopped my hand. Or at least, I told myself I didn't know. Because that was easier than acknowledging the uncomfortable possibilities. I didn't answer. Rain's face shifted, sliding into seriousness. He looked out the window as if lost in thought. It was an odd expression, like there was something he wanted to say but couldn't, like a darker thought had just crossed his mind. There are some things we need to talk about, he said. I didn't like the sound of that. Things like what? Later. His eyes fell to me for a moment longer, then he broke our stare and went to the door. Rest. I'll be back in a bit to come get you. Get me? I asked. And bring me where? But he just replied, like I said, we have some important things to discuss. And he was gone without giving me another glance. Rain did, as promised, come back a few hours later. I was sore and my head hurt fiercely, but I'd managed to get myself up and dressed. I wore my leathers, even though the stiff fabric against my still tender wound made me wince. Even when this castle had been Vincent's, I'd worn my leathers every day. I never allowed myself to forget that I was surrounded by predators, even in my own home. But lately, I'd been lax, lazy. The beasts that circled me now were more bloodthirsty than ever, but I'd been so foolishly consumed with my own grief that I let myself flop around in silk and cotton, practically offering myself up to them. No more. When Rain came to get me, he looked me up and down with a raised brow. Hmm, he said. What? Nothing. You just look ready for battle. I gave him a flat glare as we started down the hall. Where are we going? I asked. Just somewhere private to talk. My room isn't private? I couldn't quite figure out the strange look he gave me at that. I'm not bringing Septimus to your room. My brows leapt. I almost stopped walking. We're meeting with Septimus. Unfortunately. I snuck a glance at his profile. He was staring straight ahead, face tense. Unease stirred in my stomach. Something wasn't right here. Rain wasn't going to execute me. If he was going to, he already would have. He wouldn't have wasted the medicine or the time to heal me. Torture, though?
Torture was not out of the question. Maybe Rain himself wouldn't do it, but Keturah certainly would, or any of his other generals if they knew my role in the armory attack. It was what any king would do, would have to do, if faced with a traitor inside their own house. On instinct, my hands went to my hips. Of course, I had no blades. Rain didn't say another word as he led me down the hall, then down a set of stairs and into the next wing, where he opened a door at the end of the corridor. It was a small space, maybe once a study or sitting room. It was hard to tell, because, like most of the rooms in this castle, it had been stripped bare, the bookshelves now empty and not yet repopulated. A single round table sat at its center. Septimus was there already, not bothering to rise when we entered. Vale stood nearby, his arms crossed, watching me the way a falcon eyed prey. And Kyrus rose from his chair when the door opened. Kyrus smiled at me and pulled out one of the empty chairs across from Septimus. Sit. Septimus gave me a small smile that didn't reach his eyes as I obeyed. Vale sat beside Kyrus, but Rain remained standing, behind me, and only a couple of feet from my chair, so I could feel his presence but not see him. It made me wildly uncomfortable. Everyone was staring at me. I was used to being stared at, but not like this, like I was an object of curiosity. Septimus placed something at the center of the table. A little cluster of shards of glass, stacked on top of each other, silver sigils etched into its surface. Shit. The device I'd found in Vincent's study.
This probably looks familiar to you, Septimus said.
I tried very hard not to react. I didn't speak. Teeth gritted against the sudden certainty that I was about to be tortured. This was why Rain had kept me alive. Behind me, his voice shivered down my spine.
I don't think we need to ask stupid questions that we all know the answers to, right?
His voice was low, rough, teasing with a dark edge.
Araya doesn't like games.
Septimus gave a weak shrug.
Fair. It's not a question, then, Highness. You do recognize this device. You recognize it because you used it.
Give them nothing, Vincent said. I kept a careful grip on my nerves, my heartbeat. I was locked in a room with monsters. Fear is a collection of physical responses. I could practically feel Rain breathing behind me. I wished he would stand somewhere else.
You don't even know what this is, do you?
Septimus said.
This mirror, my queen, was created specifically for King Vincent, your father.
I wondered if hearing those words, even hearing Vincent's name, would ever stop aching.
It's a communication device, and a very useful one, as it can be used to look in on certain individuals, no matter where they are in Obitrace, perhaps even anywhere in the world, even if you don't know their location. An excellent way to keep discreet communication in times of war. Very powerful. Rare. Some poor sorcerer toiled over this for a long time.
Amber-threaded silver eyes crinkled with that perpetual, charming smirk.
Vincent likely gave his blood to make this thing.
And, I said coldly.
And, Septimus said, you were able to use it.
I don't know what you mean, I said. His laugh was lower now, colder.
We don't need to pretend.
And there was just something about the way he said it, something about the snide little tone to his voice that made me think of the two open locks to my room. Vincent's study, the only open door in the entire wing, and this device sitting right there, ready to be found. Would Vincent ever have left such a valuable object out on his desk?
even in the throes of warfare? Especially in the throes of warfare?
Watch that face of yours,
Vincent whispered to me. But it was too late. The sparkle of satisfaction in Septimus's eyes said he saw my realization.
Every bet I've placed on you has been a winning one, Dove, he said, over and over again.
Rain abruptly stepped out from behind me, crossing the table to stand across from me, his hands clasped behind his back, his face hard despite the smile at his lips, a strangely joyless expression.
You're lucky, Princess, he said. It turns out you're not just a traitor, you're also useful.
I'd been manipulated. Was Rain a part of that then? Using my grief and my captivity against me? Of course he was. After everything, that shouldn't have been surprising. It certainly shouldn't have hurt.
Most offspring aren't able to use blooded instruments of their parents or vice versa,
Septimus said. He ran his fingertip back and forth along the glass shard, spreading black blood along its edge. Unlike when I had done the same, the device didn't react at all. I watched it with my jaw set, far too transfixed. I wanted to take his hand off for rubbing his tainted bloodborne blood on my father's property.
The fact that you were able to actually use this and communicate information to your general, that's unusual and impressive, he went on. Perhaps it's because of your air mark. Who can truly understand the magic of the gods?
I didn't know why it made me so uncomfortable to hear this, to think about all the connections I still had to Vincent. The connections that he had told me my entire life didn't exist. Part of me wanted to cling to whatever I had left of him, wear it as a badge of pride. Another part of me hated him for it. I shut those complicated thoughts away. So you plan to what? Cut me open and start dripping my blood all over Vincent's possessions? As if I haven't had vampires lusting after my blood my entire life. Creative. Septimus chuckled, the way one would laugh at the antics of a small child.
Not all of Vincent's possessions, just some of them. Your father had a lot of secrets,
Rain said quietly, in a tone that meant so much more than the words alone. My biting response died on my tongue, because even I couldn't argue with the ugly truth of that. Too many secrets. Then, Septimus said something that I truly, down to my bones, was not expecting.
You're familiar, I assume, with the story of Alaris and Nyaxia.
What? Of course I'm familiar, I said. Is there a soul in Obitrace who isn't? What the fuck could that possibly have to do with anything?
I don't like to judge, Septimus said, lifting one shoulder. So you must know, then, that Alaris is the only major god ever to have been killed. Get to the point, Septimus,
Rain grumbled. But even as he scolded Septimus, he was watching me. Septimus raised his hands in a lazy, fair enough.
We're vampires. We know death better than any other. And we all know that any being that dies leaves something behind. Bones, blood, magic. Offspring.
Septimus gave me a knowing half-smile.
And that goes for gods, too. As what we leave behind holds some of our power, so too do a god's remains.
Despite myself, my curiosity was getting the better of me, just because what he was saying was so bizarre. You're talking about finding Alaris's corpse?
I think Alaris is much more than a corpse by now. I think his remains, whatever they are, have spread throughout Obitrace.
What makes you think so?
He smiled. I found some. In the House of Blood.
I didn't even have words. My lips parted and nothing came out.
Teeth,
he added, answering the question I was too shocked to ask.
Just a few.
Teeth? I choked out. And what the fuck does one do with the teeth of the god of death?
Not much, perhaps. But we could do a lot with his blood.
His blood? This was ridiculous.
Yes,
Septimus said simply.
I suspect that some of it remains in the House of Night, and that it could be very, very useful if found. And I suspect your dear old father knew that too.
He leaned across the table, long fingers intertwined, smirk slowly spreading into a grin.
I think he knew it, and he harnessed it,
and he hid it.
And now you get to find it for us.
I stared at him for a long moment. It was so ludicrous, I couldn't even find words. This idea that Vincent, ever practical, ever logical, might have once searched for fucking godblood. Do you actually want me to justify this with an answer? I said.
The Nightborn King once had a bit of a reputation. An affinity for seers.
Septimus placed a long emphasis on the word seers. The meaning of it wasn't lost on me. Nyaxia's magic offered little in the way of searing, though it was said some shadowborn sorcerers could do something close. So when vampires were interested in magic beyond Nyaxia's capabilities, they had to work with humans who followed other gods. Usually Akasia, the goddess of the unknown, and the only god of the White Pantheon to have a somewhat civil relationship with Nyaxia. Some Obatraean kings through the years kept pet seers, whether of Akasia or some other god. There were many useful things a king could do with such magic, but I couldn't imagine Vincent being one of those rulers, a vampire so desperate for power that he'd throw coins at some gray magic wielder. He wasn't especially religious, but he was also nothing if not loyal to Nyaxia and the power that she gave him. I still don't understand what you're asking me to.
We aren't asking anything,
Septimus said, downright politely, which made me even angrier.
If Vincent found this godblood, he no doubt would have safeguards in place to make sure that only he could use it, which means that we need you.
This was all fucking outlandish. I didn't know why they bothered asking me. I crossed my arms, lifting my chin. I refuse.
Step back and look at this situation, Araya,
Rain said. His voice was cold, calm, unlike him. He leaned closer, his palms pressed to the table. I couldn't look away from his eyes, rust red.
You betrayed the king of the House of Night, he said. You told the Hiage general to attack the armory that night. You acted against your own kingdom. That's not a small thing.
Acted against my own kingdom. Those words, and the haughty tone in which he said them, pissed me off. I rose, slowly, and leaned across the table to match his movements, looking straight into his eyes. Is it treason? I spat, lip curling. To act against a usurper? Or is that just an heir defending her crown? Rain's mouth twitched just a little.
Good question, princess,
he said.
Depends on who wins.
There he is, I thought. This was real. Then his smirk disappeared, the mask of rage back, the mask of the Nightborn King.
Make no mistake, you're lucky to be alive, he said. And the only reason we have to keep you that way is that blood of yours. So think long and hard about turning down this offer.
I don't need to. You want me to open my wrists for you and give you my father's blood so you can go find a weapon to wipe out my people? The thought sickened me, actually sickened me.
You don't have a choice,
Rain said. And this time I almost laughed in his face. Because with that little slip of his mask moments ago, now I knew this was the act, and I wasn't afraid of what Rain pretended to be.
No, I said. I will not do it.
If you want to kill me and take my blood that way,
then fine.
Silence for several long seconds as we stared each other down. Finally, Septimus chuckled.
It's been a few weeks of high emotions, he said. Give her some time to think it over, Highness. It's always so much less fun to force.
Chapter 13. Araya. Rain knocked at my door just a few hours before dawn. I knew it was him right away. I'd spent the rest of the night after that conversation with Septimus waiting for him to show up. That wasn't the end of the fight. Any minute, I told myself, and he'd be at my door, trying to force me into this. I was ready for it. I didn't get up, of course, when he knocked. Prisoner or not, I didn't feel like rising to meet my own punishment. Click, 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 as the locks released. The door swung open. Rain stood there wearing a dark cloak, a pile of fabric over one arm. He tossed it on the bed, a matching cape. Put it on, he said. I didn't.
Why?
Because I said so. That's a shit reason. Ix's tits, princess, put on the damned cloak. I narrowed my eyes at him, confused and trying not to show it. A few hours ago, he'd been all but threatening to torture me. I'm not sure why I'd go anywhere with you or do anything you ask me to, I said curtly, when you've already made it so clear you'll just force me to do whatever you want. He sighed.
We can't have this conversation here. Just put on the cloak and come on, he said,
raised his hood and left the room. I sat there for a few long seconds, then cursed to myself under my breath. Mother damn that human curiosity. I put on the cloak and followed Rain. He'd gone next door to his chamber. He held the door open for me, then closed it behind us. I had never been in this room. The apartment had been empty when I lived here as a child. Vincent would never let anyone but himself so close to me, considering the fragility of my human skin and the draw of my human blood. There were only two chambers in this wing, so keeping this one unoccupied left me isolated. Safe. It was a mirror image of my own. A small sitting room, a washroom, a bedchamber. I eyed the open door to Rain's bedchamber. Much messier than I would have expected. The sheets and blankets a pile on the bed. And tried not to think about the fact that our rooms shared a wall. Rain strode to the other end of the sitting room, where two large windows stretched to the ceiling. He unlatched one of them, letting it fly open. A rush of dry desert air rustled his hair around his face as he climbed up on the sill, turned to me, and offered his hand. With a puff of smoke, his wings unfurled. I didn't move. Come on, he said. Absolutely not. We both know you're going to agree, so let's skip the part where we go back and forth about it. We don't have a lot of time. Are you asking me or are you commanding me? His mouth tightened. Can I really command you to do anything? If you really want to go back to your room and sit there by yourself, you can do that too. Your choice. He pulled his hood up a bit more, the shadow over the top half of his face highlighting the smirk on his mouth, the strength of his jaw, the light pooling in the lines of the scar on his left cheek. Mother damn him. I wished he wasn't right, but he was. I approached warily. He reached for me and hesitated.
May I?
He asked, his voice a little rough. I nodded, trying very hard to look nonchalant. It wasn't the first time Rain had flown with me, but it was the first time since the end of the Qajari. The thought of being that close to him, the thought of allowing him to hold me, it... Fear is a collection of physical responses, I told myself, trying desperately to slow my rapid heartbeat before he could sense it. Even though this was a whole different kind of fear than the adrenaline rush of bodily danger,
harder to numb. I stepped onto the sill and he pulled me into his arms, one tied across my back, the other under my thighs. I wrapped my arms around his neck in a way that felt far more natural than it should have. He smelled the same, like the desert and the rush of the sky. The warmth of his body felt the same, too, firm and stable. For a brief, terrible moment, we paused, just like that. His muscles tightened, as if struggling with the instinct to pull me closer, to make this a real embrace. Such a subtle movement, but I still felt it, because my awareness of him was so agonizingly acute. My attempts to slow my heart had failed, and Rain undoubtedly heard it. My eyes fell to his throat, right at the angle of his jaw where muscles flexed as he swallowed and turned his head slightly to look at me. I didn't want to meet his eyes, because that would have put our faces far too close together. His thumb rubbed that single circle on my upper back. "You're safe," he murmured. "All right." He sounded a little sad. And then he hurled us into the night sky. He brought us, to my surprise, to the human districts. He kept us out of sight during the flight and landed in the yard of an abandoned building. As soon as he set me down, I took two steps away from him, eager to put space between us. Our hoods had fallen back in the wind. Rain casually replaced his and started walking to the main streets. "This way."
"Where are we?"
I didn't recognize this part of town. I'd been all over the districts, but this was near the outskirts of Sivrnaj's borders, far even for us during our nighttime training sessions.
"I want to show you something."
He glanced over his shoulder, the hood obscuring all but his profile.
"Oh, and I brought these for you, in case you want to have some fun while you're here."
He held out two sheathed weapons, blades. Shock stole my steps for a moment. Then I had to half run to catch up to him. I snatched the weapons from his hands in case he thought better of it. I unsheathed them, watched the light play over the carvings on the black steel. Nightborn steel. The good shit. Not just any blades, my blades. I thought it would feel right to have these in my hands again, like being reunited with an old friend. Instead, I had to brace against the sudden visceral memory of what I had done with these very weapons the last time I'd held them. "Why would you give me these?"
"I figured you'll need them. No poison in them, though. I haven't had time to track any down, but maybe we should call it a precaution."
Rain was walking fast. I didn't have much time to admire them, stumbling along as I affixed the sheaths to my belt while keeping up with him. Leathers. Weapons. Human districts. It was all eerily familiar, and yet so wildly different. We emerged onto a denser street, little clay buildings packed together like crooked teeth.
"Keep that hood up,"
Rain muttered, though there was no one around, and crossed the street to a rickety building with four stories that all seemed to be a little misaligned, like a stack of unsteady bricks. A single lantern swung in the breeze at the door, the suggestion of light seeping between curtained window panes. Rain opened the door without knocking, and I followed. It led us into a small, dim lobby with a single desk and a narrow staircase. A rotund, middle-aged human man dozed at the desk, an empty glass of very pungent-smelling alcohol drawing amber circles on scattered papers. Rain ignored him, and I followed his lead as he went up the stairs. At the top floor, he reached into his pocket and produced a key. Apparently, the lock didn't work very well anymore, so he grumbled through three attempts before the door finally swung open. He gave me a sly smile beneath the hood.
"After you, princess."
Tentatively, I stepped into the room. It was an apartment, a stark contrast to the one we had just left in the castle. The entirety of the place was smaller than the bedroom alone there. The only furniture, a small single bed, a dresser, and one tiny desk that I suspected Rain probably couldn't even fit at. It was clearly occupied, though. The desk held books and papers. One half-open dresser drawer revealed a glimpse of crumpled fabric, and the washroom lantern was still lit. The bed was a little messy, like someone had slept in it recently and made it very hurriedly. I walked around the room slowly, brow furrowed. Who lives here? Rain closed the door and latched it behind us.
I do.
I halted, mid-stride. My brows lurched. He chuckled softly.
It's still satisfying to shock you. Fine, maybe living here is a bit of an exaggeration.
He unhooked his cloak, tossed it onto the bed, and then fell backwards onto it with a grunt of satisfaction.
It's somewhere private to go.
I thought of all those days that I never heard Rain's footsteps return to his rooms. You sleep here?
Sometimes.
A pause, and then,
sometimes I can't. Sometimes I just want to get away from that place.
I watched him practically deflate onto the bed. He did immediately seem more at ease here, like the remnants of whatever mask he wore within the walls of the castle had finally fallen free. I didn't want to see this version of Rain, the version that reminded me far too much of the man I'd... I cleared my throat, stuffed my hands into my pockets, and wandered the perimeter.
No one knows about it, Rain said.
No one but me, I corrected. I could hear the smile in his voice.
No one but you.
Stupid of you.
Maybe.
Since I'm a traitor and all. The bed creaked as Rain sat back up. I turned around to see him giving me a stare that made me jolt. All seriousness.
We need to talk, he said. And we needed to do it somewhere. I knew no one else would hear us.
I thought you said everything you needed to say. Or Septimus did, at least. My words were pointed, the accusation clear.
I say what I need to say in front of them.
You manipulated me, I snapped. You've been playing games with me since the beginning. Rain's face hardened.
You committed an act of war, Araya.
I let out a choked laugh. I committed an act of war?
Me?
This was a mistake. I shouldn't even be here. I was armed now. I could... He winced, then raised his hands.
Let's not. This isn't what I'm here for.
Then what? He stood, went to the dresser, and pulled something out of the middle drawer. Something long, wrapped in fabric. He laid the object over the desk beside me and unwrapped it. My heart caught in my throat. The Taker of Hearts. Vincent's sword. It was an incredible weapon. He'd had it for centuries and never refuted or confirmed the legends surrounding it. That it was God-forged. That it was cursed. That it was blessed. That he'd carved out a little chunk of his own heart to have it made. He'd told me these legends when I was a child sometimes, always with a completely serious face, but a glint of amusement in his eye. Legends aside, the reality was impressive enough. The weapon was incredibly powerful, enhancing Vincent's already significant magical strength. It was his and his alone, rejecting all other wielders. I used to joke that the sword was Vincent's true greatest love. For most of my life, I think I believed it. Now, the image of Vincent's bloodied face, straining to look at me in his final breaths, cut through my mind.
I loved you from the first moment.
My chest was very, very tight. Rain stepped back, leaning against the wall as if to give me space alone with it.
You can pick it up, he said,
oddly gently.
Just be careful. Hurts like a bitch if you touch the hilt too long.
I unsheathed the sword and lay it over the desk. It was light, a slender and elegant rapier. The blade was bright red, swirls and sigils carved into its length that matched those on my own. The hilt was made of night steel, forming delicate spirals around the handguard, which resembled the bones of Hiage wings. I stared at it, for a long time, not trusting myself to speak. A slow rising tide of grief and anger swelled inside me.
Rain had been keeping this sword. My father's most prized possession, now owned by the man who had killed him. Why are you showing me this? Surely he couldn't think it was some kind of sentimental peace offering.
Could you wield it?
I blinked in surprise and turned to Rain. I briefly questioned if I'd heard him right. No, I said. No one can wield it but him.
No one could use the mirror but him either. And you used that.
That's different. This is his. Vincent had warned me many times against even touching the weapon. For all the obvious reasons one would warn a child against such a thing, in the beginning, but later because he made it very clear it would be dangerous for me to even hold it. The weapon could only be wielded by him, and what was painful to vampires could very well be deadly to me. Why? I asked pointedly. Is this another thing you want me to do for Septimus? The shadow of anger that passed over Rain's face was fleeting but powerful.
No.
Then why would you hand me a weapon like this and want me to use it? After I'd acted against him? After he had made it so clear the role I was intended to play? Handing me this weapon, hell, even letting me know that it still existed, was a downright stupid move. He said simply,
"Because you're right."
I'd told myself so many times that I'd never let Rain surprise me again. And yet, here we were.
"Because the things you said in Vincent's office that night, they're true," he said. "There is no excuse for what I have allowed the Bloodborne to do to this kingdom. Septimus is preying on both of us. I allowed myself to be manipulated into an alliance that I didn't want, into a deal I can't get out of, and now, here we fucking are."
He paced closer, step by step, and I didn't move away. I glanced to the floor, uncomfortable when he spoke of being forced into his alliance, but I still saw his face anyway. That moment when Angelica had been ready to kill me and I'd watched Rain look up into the stands and nod. Another paradox I couldn't reconcile. Rain had murdered my father and taken my kingdom and imprisoned me. But he had done it all to save my life. "I know I'm right," I said. "And?" A faint smile of amusement gone in seconds.
"And I want you to help me do something about it."
"If this is another speech about, no, this is about blood, Araya." He didn't blink. His eyes didn't leave mine.
"This is about getting the Bloodborne out of our fucking kingdom."
"Your allies. The ones you're relying on to keep your throne."
"Allies,"
he scoffed. And there was something about the way he said it under his breath that made a realization crash through me. Septimus had manipulated me to test his theory, knowing I would never cooperate with him. And until now, I'd assumed that Rain had been right beside him in that. Maybe even that he had instigated it. Now, I was suddenly certain that I had been wrong. "You didn't know," I said. "You didn't know about any of this either. The mirror? The armory attack? The god blood?" The look on Rain's face confirmed my theory long before he spoke. Because there had been Rishon forces at the armory, but no Bloodborne. If Rain had been involved, there should have been many more Rishon troops at the base that night. But they were as unprepared as we were. He ended up losing just as many soldiers as I did. Only Septimus had come out of it all unscathed. With both the Rishon and the Hiage weakened, and his theory confirmed. "He's a snake," Rain muttered. "He didn't tell me about any of it until afterwards. I showed him what he wanted to see. Threw my dick around, shouted, big stupid warrior shit. And then I went along with him, after giving him just enough resistance to make it believable." Rain and his performances. "I made a deal I can't get out of," he went on. "I've granted Septimus that much. But, regardless of whether we find what he wants, he may not even be the one who can use it. And there are other things in the House of Night that are just as powerful, but to wield them, I'll need your help." I scoffed, and he raised his palms.
"Easy, Viper,"
Let me finish, he said, before I could speak. Help me find the Godblood. Help me fulfill Septimus's ridiculous quest, but then, I want you to help me use it to betray him and throw those bloodborne bastards out of this kingdom once and for all. And after that, you're free to do whatever you want. I scoffed again. Whatever you want. I didn't mean to look surprised. Mother damn my face. He laughed softly. You never believed me, but I never intended to keep you captive. I'm asking you, not forcing you to help me. And after that, you have my word that we're done. What is your word worth? Not much. It's seen better days. A little banged up, but it's all I have to offer, unfortunately. I stared down at my father's sword. He died with it soaking up his blood mere feet from him in the Colosseum sands. The House of Night was my father's kingdom. It was my kingdom. Rain had lied to me so many times. And yet, I found myself considering this. Won't Septimus suspect this? I asked. He has eyes everywhere. No vampire has eyes here. He gestured to the dim, dusty room, distinctly human. You're right, though. We'll have to be careful. Make sure he sees only what he expects to see. I'll play the part of the Brute King. You play the part of the prisoner wife who hates him. That will be easy, I said. I do hate you. I'd thought those words to myself countless times. I hate him, I hate him, I hate him. And yet, when they slipped over my tongue, they tasted rancid, bitter for all the ways they were true and untrue. Because they should not be anything but true when I was standing before the man who murdered my father. Rain's face went still, just for a split second, like he was collecting himself after a blow. And then he smiled, easy and comfortable. Oh, I know, he said. That's for the better. You aren't much of an actress. He extended his hand, but, he added, softly, seriously, you are one hell of an ally. Ally? A lifetime ago, he had offered me an alliance. I knew it was a mistake to take it then, too. But I was powerless now, just as I was then. A human in a world of vampires, an heir with no teeth, a daughter with no way to avenge her father. Rain was offering me power, more power than I'd ever dreamed of wielding. And power was the currency of revenge. I took Rain's hand. It was warm and rough, and much larger than my own. He folded his fingers around mine just slightly. Even his touch felt different now, like all the magic that pulsed beneath the surface of our skin called to and repelled each other, as if recognizing its natural enemy. Rain was stronger than ever, but so was I. And with the power that Rain talked about, the power that belonged to me by birthright, I would be unstoppable. He was offering me everything I needed to destroy him. Deal, I said.
Chapter 14. Rain. I do hate you. I knew Araya hated me. Who could possibly blame her for that? I didn't know why it bothered me so much to hear it. Bothered me enough that it overshadowed my victory. Victory. I'd gotten her to agree to something she essentially had no choice but to do. And I wasn't stupid. I knew that there was a good chance that the entire time she'd be waiting for her moment to kill me. I knew that perhaps that's exactly what she told herself as she took my hand and agreed to our deal. It was a gamble for both of us. But she'd had her blade right there in that armory, right at my heart, and she hadn't taken the shot. That was something. And the truth was, my complicated personal feelings for Araya aside, I needed her. Without her, I had no chance of getting out from under Septimus's grasp. Maybe a small, pathetic part of me had also been grateful for that, grateful to have any excuse to have her as an ally again. Even a reluctant one. Araya didn't say anything as we flew back to my chambers. It was embarrassing how much carrying her reminded me of what our relationship used to be before I raised it. I could feel how terrified she was the entire time. That heart rate, her breathing, the heat at her skin, all the comfort we'd built, destroyed. As soon as I let her down at my window, she backed away from me. I wondered if she knew she had a pattern to the way she did that. 3 long, quick steps back, like she couldn't wait to put as much distance between us as possible. I remained on the ledge, relishing the breeze against the backs of my wings for a little longer. I led Araya back all the way across the room before I stepped inside. She didn't want me any closer, and I'd respect that. "We'll need to get started right away," I said. "Tomorrow, probably. As soon as I let them all know that you've agreed." "Them?" she said. "Vale, Karis, Keturah, Septimus and his goons." It was hard to miss the way she stiffened at the mention of all those names. "They won't bother you," I said. "I'll handle your training." Her brows lowered. "Training? What? Did you think you were going to wield legendary god power and overthrow the most vicious vampire house without getting back into shape?" Her brows lowered again. "I'm in great shape. Don't know about you, though. That fight was a little too easy." Ix's tits, it was hard not to laugh at that face. I raised my palms. "Fine, I admit it. You kept me on my toes, too. I've never been better than I was when I was with you." That sentence tasted disgustingly earnest rolling off my tongue. Araya heard it, too, shifting uncomfortably. "One more thing," she said. "What's that?" "You're going to stop locking me in my room." My brows rose. "Oh, I am?" "Yes, you are." "And why is that?" "Because we're supposedly allies again, and allies don't lock each other up every night." "I have some allies I certainly wish I could lock up," I remarked. "You can frame it as a concession you had to make to get me to do this willingly. That's reasonable and true." My brows rose. "Is it?" "It is." Leaving Araya unguarded was a bad idea for a lot of reasons. The obvious ones, of course, because she was the Hiage heir, and had acted against me less than a week ago, and had every reason to sneak around gathering information and finding ways to pass it off to the people who were trying to kill mine. But none of those reasons bothered me as much as the others. Not protecting my crown from Araya, but protecting Araya from my crown. "This castle isn't a safe place, princess," I said. "Not even for me, especially not for me. And that goes double for you. You sure you really want that?"
"You keep telling me that I'm a queen, not a prisoner, so prove it. No one locks queens up in their bedchambers."
Nekule had locked Nessunin up. That was a sudden, unwelcome thought. I pushed it away, deciding that this was a fair point. Besides, everything with Araya was a risk, always had been. "Fine," I said, with a half shrug. "Done. No more locks." Her shoulders lowered slightly with relief. I liked seeing that.
"Then I'm going to bed," she said.
"Good. You'll need the rest before we get started." She went to the door and opened it, and before I could stop myself, the word was coming up my throat. "Araya!" She turned back. Even from across the room, her steel gaze cut deep. A pang pulsed in my chest. I didn't even know what I'd intended to say. "Thank you, you won't regret this." The former was patronizing, the second was a promise I couldn't make. I'd lied to Araya enough. I didn't want to do it again. Finally, I settled on. "I always meant it. The offer I made you. There is no one I would rather have ruling this kingdom beside me than you." I saw in her face that she knew exactly what I was talking about.
"I know," she said after a long moment, and left.
After Araya was gone, I spent a few minutes standing at the window watching the sunrise over Sivernage, the smoky sky turning purple, then pink. The familiar burning at my skin started slow at first, as it always did. and it was almost fully dawn by the time I reluctantly pulled away. A message had been left for me while I was gone. I picked up the parchment and read it. For a long time, I just stared at it. Then I cursed, shoved it into my pocket, and threw open the door. I went downstairs, all the way down to the guest wing, staring straight ahead until I reached the one closed door. I pounded on it, not bothering to be polite, continuing even when there was no answer.
"Gods, have a little patience!"
A light, cheerful voice came from inside with a rush of footsteps. The door swung open. The moment it did, I said gruffly, "You aren't supposed to be..." But I barely even got those words out before Misha's face split into a grin that I saw for all of half a second before she threw herself at me. And damn if it wasn't good to see a friendly face. Misha threw her arms around my neck and hugged me like she'd thought she'd never see me again. And of course I hugged her back, because what was I, a monster? Her hair had gotten longer, now near her shoulders. The caramel curls still smelled like sweat and the desert from her travel. "You aren't supposed to be here," I said. "Told you not to come." I tried to sound very mean and failed.
"Oh, fuck you,"
Misha said affectionately, the way someone would say, "I missed you too, idiot." Chapter 15. Rain.
It was boring just wandering around by myself. What else was I supposed to do?
Stay out of trouble. Stay away from the capital of a civil war. Go find somewhere safe and relaxing to be. Mrs. Nose scrunched.
Safe and relaxing?
She said this like the thought was ridiculous, and to be fair, anyone who had met Misha even once would know that it was. Misha was the opposite of safe and relaxing. Misha was so impulsive and reckless that sometimes it genuinely scared me. Once she finally released me from her chokehold of an embrace, she dragged me into her sitting room. She was wearing a dusty white shirt and trousers, still travel-stained. But if she was tired, she didn't show it, curling up in an armchair and drawing her knees up to her chest as she demanded, wide-eyed, that I tell her everything. She'd heard the biggest news, she said, but she wanted to get it all from me. There was not a single person in the world I was more comfortable with than Misha. She'd seen me at my worst, and yet telling her the entire story of what had happened in the final trial of the Qajari and beyond, it was hard. I hadn't collected all the events in one place like that before. My eyes fell to a particular spot on the carpet as I told her, as sparsely as I could, what had happened. By the time I was done, Misha's excitement had turned to such raw, eviscerating sadness that when I flicked my gaze back to her, it made me choke a laugh. She looked like she was near tears. "Ix's tits, Mish. It's not that dramatic." But Misha just unwound her legs, crossed the room, and gave me one more long hug. This one not the puppy excited squeeze of a reunion, but the quiet embrace of a supportive friend. I wriggled away from her grasp. "I'm all right, and you stink."
"You can't lie to me,"
she muttered, then sat cross-legged on the floor, her chin propped in her hands. "Seriously, Misha," I picked at my fingernail. I wasn't sure if the blood still stuck underneath it was someone else's or my own from my incessant picking, but I couldn't bring myself to leave it alone. "Things are rough here. You should go back to the country." It was the easiest thing for me to say, for me to push Misha out of Sivrnaj, and yet a loud part of myself cursed at me for even saying the words, even knowing, of course, that she wouldn't listen. I'd missed her. No, that was an understatement. She was my only family, blood or no. There were two people alive right now who I felt, for better or worse, really knew me. Araya and Misha. When Araya looked at me, it was all accusation. "I see what you really are." But when Misha looked at me, it was affection, and I'd missed that. But it was also uncomfortable. It was always harder to play the roles I needed to play when Misha was around, knowing me too well.
"It was boring as shit out there. Besides, did you really think that I would just leave you here alone?" A wrinkle deepened between her brows. Or her? Her, Aurea. Despite it all, it warmed my heart a bit to know how fond Misha had grown of Aurea. It was like she'd known right from the beginning how important she would become. I'd always wondered if Misha had a bit of mind magic in her, just a touch of it. Those things weren't in the domain of Atroxus, but her empathy was a bit uncanny. I felt like I needed Misha, and I hated that. But maybe Aurea needed her even more than I did right now. I said, vocalizing none of this. Things are bad? I thought of Aurea's ragged sobs in the middle of the day, when she thought no one could hear her. Thought of the empty nothingness on her face for weeks. Thought of her voice. I do hate you. Yes, I said. Things are bad. The concession was bitter with regret. I'd long ago given up on some image of myself as a morally decent person. I'd killed hundreds with my own hands over the years, thousands indirectly, as a result of my actions in the last Qajari or this one. I'd done what was necessary to survive. I tried not to beat myself up about it. But I would always regret this. Breaking Aurea. That was a sin that I'd never be able to atone for. A long silence, then Misha said softly,
I'm just really, really glad that you're not dead, Rain.
I laughed a little, but she snapped.
Not a joke. I mean it. What were you thinking?
I wasn't sure I was glad I wasn't dead. When Aurea had killed me, I'd felt certain that I was doing the right thing, giving Aurea the power she needed to seize her potential, giving the House of Night a clean start. No messy alliances with the Bloodborne, no complicated pasts. That had seemed worth dying for in that moment. The dying, after all, wasn't the hard part. The coming back was where all the mess started. I just said too casually. I wasn't really doing much thinking, even though it was a blatant lie. Her brow furrowed.
But you worked so hard for this.
I had to clench my jaw to keep from saying the truth. For this, no. I'd entered the Qajari because Misha had. Because she'd forced my hand. Because one day when we were traveling, she'd caught me on a particularly bad night and I'd told her all of it. The truth of who I was and the scar on my back. The things I'd never uttered aloud to another person. Every emotion painted over Misha's face, and that night I'd watched her sadness for me, and then her confusion, and then the thing that actually hurt. The excitement.
You, she'd breathed, eyes lighting up, are the heir of the Risen line, and you aren't doing anything about it? Do you have any idea what you could do?
That had fucking killed me. The hope. We'd gotten into a fight that night, one of our worst, even after years of constant companionship. The next night, Misha had disappeared. I'd been beside myself by the time she returned, nearly at daybreak, and she'd showed me her hand, her blood-offering scar.
We're entering the Qajari, she said smugly,
like she'd just signed us up for a painting class or a city tour. I hadn't been so angry in years. I did everything I could, trying to find a way to get her out of it, but in the end I ended up there right beside her, just like she knew I would. After my initial outburst that first night, I never told her how I felt about that. I held that discomfort in a tight knot in my chest, buried deep. It was hard to be angry at Misha. But harder than the anger was the concern. It was no small act to enter the Qajari. I thought often, unwillingly, about Misha and the decision she made, and the way that sheer fucking luck had saved her life. Only one person could win the Qajari. What had Misha's plan been, if things had unfolded differently? I didn't like to think about that. I tore my eyes from Misha's accusatory stare, and they drifted to the hand she had propped over her knee, and the burn scars barely visible under the fabric of her sleeve. If she saw that look, she ignored it, instead cocking her head and giving me a light, reassuring smile.
Don't look so depressed, she said. It'll turn out. I know it will.
It's just hard right now. But it's good that you're here. If only the truth was as easy as Mish's optimistic platitudes. I gave her a sidelong glance. And how have you been?
Me?
Her face went serious for a minute before she gave me a carefree shrug.
Oh, you know me. I'm always good.
I knew her all right. Knew her well enough to know when she was lying, and to know when not to push. I reached over and rustled her hair, making her wrinkle her nose and jerk away.
It's too long, she said. I've got to cut it.
I like it. Change looks good on you. She scowled, then she caught my eye and the expression melted into a grin.
Caught you, she said. You're happy I'm here.
Never, I said. Fine, she had me. Fucking guilty.
Chapter 16. Araya. Rain was true to his word. After that, the door was no longer locked. I wasn't about to fall all over myself with the benevolence of this gift. I had no doubt that guards were still keeping their eyes on me. Still, I liked freedom. The next night, I walked the castle halls by myself. Guards and soldiers gave me strange looks, but no one bothered me. It felt uncomfortable in a way I couldn't pinpoint. Maybe it was because the castle already looked so different. It was all a mess still. Then again, I couldn't help but contrast it to the decay that I'd seen when I had walked these halls during the Qajari, when I'd noticed for the first time the stagnant decay lurking beneath my home. No one could call this place stagnant now. I paused at the balcony that overlooked the feast hall. It was one of the few rooms that hadn't been moved much. The tables were still in the same arrangement. The furniture hadn't been changed. For a moment, I saw the sea of brutality Vincent had shown me during our final argument. His fingernails digging into my arm as he pushed me against this very railing, forcing me to look down upon the humans below, slumped over those tables like drained livestock. I shuddered and turned away. Training. That was what I needed. Rain was right. I was out of practice. I'd felt that when we fought at the armory, and the way my muscles ached the next day was a lingering reminder. I turned around and paused, staring down the hallway before me. All at once, it hit me why it had felt so strange to walk these corridors. Because I'd never been allowed to before. Vincent may not have put locks on my door, but his command was more than enough to stop me from leaving. And he made those expectations very clear. Yes, I snuck out, but that was in the middle of the day, creeping around like a little shadow, shrinking from every set of footsteps. Never before had I ever been able to move about this castle freely. Never. That was a strange realization.
Isn't it nice to see you out and about?
I tried very hard not to show that I'd startled, and failed. I turned to see Septimus bowing his head in apology.
Sorry, didn't mean to scare you.
It sure seemed like he did, the way he slunk around like that.
I'm glad you came around,
he said.
I heard you've agreed to help us on our little mission.
You say that like I had a choice. He lifted one shoulder in a half shrug.
Still, better this way. Forcing you would have been difficult for everyone. I expect especially difficult for your husband.
I hated it when people referred to Rain that way. For the first time in my life, I was grateful for my too expressive face. The sneer of disgust that flitted over the bridge of my nose before I could stop it. I had a role to play, after all.
I'm the brute king and you're the prisoner wife who hates me.
Septimus chuckled.
I wouldn't want to be on the wrong end of that, he said.
He reached into his pocket and withdrew a cigarillo box. He slid it open, then hesitated, his hand hovering over the row of neat black rolls. A strange look came over his face. Rigid stillness, like a wave of ice had fallen across his features. My brow furrowed, my gaze following his, to his hand over that box, frozen mid-movement, like his muscles had locked without his permission. His ring finger lurched in erratic spurts that shook his entire hand. For several long seconds, we stared at his hand. Then, he smoothly switched the box to his other hand, swiftly withdrew a cigarillo, and held it between his teeth as he put the box away again. It was like the moment had never existed. He winked at me, smile smooth and charming and forever unbothered.
"Have fun training," he said. "I'll leave you to it. We're going to have a busy few months ahead."
And he sauntered off without another word. Fine. I was out of shape. It felt good to have my blades back again, but restoring that piece of my routine had only made it more obvious how much had changed. I had gone from a life of moving all day